Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about faith, family, freedom, the state of Illinois, our nation, and conservative action. Here's David Smith and Monty Larrick.
The left continues to redefine sexuality, and we're seeing the results. An explosion of children and teens identifying as transsexuals, puberty blockers, even the anti-science mutilation of minors. During this special edition of Illinois Family Spotlight, Lori Higgins, the culture writer for the Illinois Family Institute, tells us the endgame could be all co-ed spaces everywhere and no privacy anywhere. At Gospel Fellowship Church in Wheaton, Lori recently gave a Christ-like response to sexual anarchy.
I was a stay-at-home mom. I was not an activist. I call myself an accidental activist. I was never politically engaged, occasionally sent a short letter to either local press or the Chicago Tribune, but was never involved. Then I went to work at Deerfield High School, which is the high school both my husband and I attended, not at the same time, and all four of my kids went there. And I was a member of the English department. I worked full-time in the writing center. And it was then that I discovered that the school was promoting through curricular resources. I'm going to use the language leftist. I don't like liberal. I don't like progressive. So I hope I don't offend anyone. They were providing materials to kids that embodied and espoused leftist assumptions about the nature and morality of homosexuality. The transgender issue was not an issue then. And so I started addressing with my department and my superiors. And at my last 3 years there, our superintendent was homosexual. He'd been married. He'd left his family. And so had lots of conversation. And I approached it. This is a very liberal community. I was, I don't know if I said Deerfield High School, a very liberal community. I wasn't going to approach this as a moral issue. I approached it as a pedagogical issue. I said, in a school, you have an obligation to present both sides on issues. And they were not only presenting only one side, they were in effect censoring any dissenting voices on this. They wouldn't say they were censoring, they just didn't choose any dissenting sources. So from there was lots of conversation, lots of drama. It became very bad for me. At about the same time in 2008, the end of 2008, I was offered a job with the Illinois Family Institute. And so I've been writing for IFI for a few years. I want to say, in case anyone Googles my name, I don't hate anyone. I don't hate people who experience same-sex attraction. I don't hate people who identify as homosexual and celebrate that. Same thing for the trans. I am on the Southern Poverty Law Center's website as a hater, and I'm glad. And so I just want people to know that. Because of the work I do, some say that I might err on truth. I say it's because of the work I do. I'm dealing with activism. I'm dealing with public policy. In my personal relationships, I think my son left here, but all four of my kids have had either acquaintances or John's dearest friend growing up came out in high school as homosexual, loved the kid, always loved him, didn't change my feelings when he came out. So, and I worked with kids who were my tutors in the writing center who identify as homosexual. So I don't hate anyone. It is a challenge to balance grace and truth. And if people are waiting to engage this issue publicly, and when I mean publicly, I mean with colleagues, neighbors, friends, anyone, just not internally or just not within the church. If you're waiting to figure out a way to do it that you won't be called a hater, don't wait. It can't happen. Christians are fond of paraphrasing St. Augustine and saying, love the sinner, hate the sin. I want to tell you right now, the homosexual community detests that phrase. We think it's a sign of grace. They think it's hateful. There is no way that you can say, no matter how winsomely you say it, no matter how complete you make your thought, if you say homosexual activity is immoral, relationships, that is never a marriage, a same-sex union can never be a marriage because marriage has an ontology, you will be called a hater. I also want to say, I do not believe that people choose to experience same-sex attraction. I don't think they choose to experience gender dysphoria. I think they choose how to respond to those impulses. And all sins are not alike. And this is a doctrine that seems to have infected the evangelical Protestant church more than other churches, I would say, maybe more than Catholicism, I'm not sure. Rob Gagnon is like one of the foremost experts on the Bible and homosexuality. I'm sure these guys are familiar with his writing. And he explains this quite thoroughly. All sins are alike in one way. They separate man from God. All sins are not alike in all ways, and some are more serious. And this is not saying that homosexuals are more evil. It's saying the consequences are more dire, and we should feel deeply about these issues. So the trans revolution, which I don't think the Christians are getting, I don't think the conservative community is getting, is one of the most significant revolutions, I argue, in the history of mankind, to get to a place where people in developed countries who worship at the altar of science are now saying, yeah, you can be born in the wrong body. You know, Rob touched on that, which is the old Gnostic heresy emerging again, that somehow we're separate, like there's our spirit and there's our body and they can be separate. So this revolution is hugely significant, and we need to grasp that. I'm going to define terms, which I don't need to define sex. We're talking about biological sex determined by our genetics and manifest in our anatomy and physiology. Rob was making this distinction. I want to make it clearer. Gender used to be synonymous, but if you're talking to someone who's on the left, either someone who identifies as trans, who is affirming that, gender is the socially constructed, arbitrary conventions, expectations, behaviors, roles that we associate with males or females. That's what they will say. So it's really important when you're talking to people, when you mean biological sex, please say biological sex. If you say gender, they're going to hear something very different. They've had to create new language to conceal the incoherence of their own ideology, or they redefine other terms. And gender identity is the subjective, internal, felt sense of being male or female. That's different from gender. Gender are the roles, the expectations. Gender expression is the way they present themselves. You know, do they adopt these socially constructed, arbitrary behaviors and expectations in order to present themselves as the sex they are not? And then I'll just say, does everyone know cisgender? Okay, I did this, I spoke at Moody recently, and I thought everyone would know cisgender. I'm too immersed in my own world. Cisgender is the term that they have come up with.
CIS, right?
CIS. And you can have cis woman, cis man. That is, I want to say, normal people. And by, I don't mean that as a pejorative. If anyone here struggles with gender dysphoria, I just mean it's the norm. It's the bulk of people identify with the sex they are. They recognize what their sex is, and they accept it. They might identify as homosexual, but they recognize that they're male or female. Their gender identity, the left will say, conforms with their biological sex. They will say that their gender identity conforms to the gender they were assigned at birth. I just want to say this. No doctors assign a gender at birth, because remember, gender are the socially constructed roles. Doctors do not deliver babies and assign them roles. They identify their sex. Every trans person knows they have a sex, they know what it is, and they know it never changes. The expression born in the wrong body, I just want to say this briefly, all it really means is I wish I were the opposite sex. That's what it means. It means nothing more than that. I think it's really important for us to have this discussion with people, to ask people on the left who affirm the trans ideology, what is maleness or femaleness? What constitutes maleness or femaleness? They can't rationally say that it has anything to do with physical embodiment, because they've already said Bruce Jenner was fully female when he had all of his intact body parts. They say you can be fully female even if you have a penis and testes. Oh yeah, I should warn you. I use, you know, indiscreet language. So, and you can be fully, I'm going to go the other way, I said fully female with that, and fully male if you have breasts and a vagina. So they will say that. So they can't say maleness or femaleness are defined by anatomy and physiology. But they also can't say that it's defined by their interests. They can't say, well, I know a male can't say, I know I'm female because I like to play with Barbies and I liked pink, because they've already said those are socially constructed and arbitrary conventions. So what this reveals is their whole ideology is circular. It's based on ideas internally incoherent and inconsistent. Has anyone ever heard of body integrity identity disorder, BIID? Body integrity identity disorder is a condition in which people feel a mismatch between their subjective internal sense of themselves and their actual bodies. And they seek alignment by having their bodies changed. This is not to do with their sexual anatomy. It has to do with their bodily integrity, their wholeness. They identify most commonly with amputees, secondarily with paralytics. And I've heard of one case where a woman identified with blind people. And this starts very young. It's very persistent. It's very strong, the feelings. They can't, of course, get doctors to help them out with this. So they will sometimes engage in self-harm. So when they're taken to the hospital, they have to finish the job. Usually it's a limb that they want amputated. There's a documentary called Whole, W-H-O-L-E, so you can read about this. And I've written about it a number of times, so on our website you can find that. So the question is, why is that beyond the pale to amputate a leg? It's usually below the knee that they want it. But it's not beyond the pale to do a double mastectomy on 15-year-olds. And yes, we are doing them here in Illinois on 15-year-olds. So I would argue that this is much less impactful on your life to lose the bottom part of your leg than it is to be chemically castrated. And I'll talk about that in a minute. I just wanted to mention that before I get to some of the things that people are doing. Many of you know that kids are now being given puberty blockers. So they're giving, one of the common ones is Lupron. They also give Lupron to kids who are destined to be very short. So they'll give them Lupron, nothing to do with transgenderism. They'll give them Lupron so it delays puberty and they'll grow taller. And Kaiser Health News just recently came out with a report about how risky Lupron is. They're finding that it affects bone density also, so it's causing osteopenia, which is bone thinning, osteoporosis, fibromyalgia, a whole bunch of stuff. The FDA is reviewing it. Oh yeah, I'm going to talk like Ben Shapiro tonight, like really, really fast. And so But what people aren't being told is that when your kids are given puberty blockers, it doesn't just prevent the development of secondary sex characteristics. It prevents the social experiences that attend puberty. So, and you can't recapture that. Then these kids move into being given cross-sex hormones. And so they'll tell you that the puberty blockers are reversible. Once you stop giving them, they'll go through puberty. Of course, they've missed that social experiences time, but when you give them cross-sex hormones, so boys are being given estrogen, girls are being given testosterone, two of the effects that are irreversible on those are voice changes. So one thing, girls can only be their voice taken so low, and boys can only be taken so high. So the result is this sort of mid-range where it's kind of an odd voice, but they can't really go high and low. So they do have vocal coaching for that, actually. At Northwestern University, they can go and have vocal coaching to help them mimic the opposite sex. But the cross-sex hormones also leave them chemically sterile. And so we are giving these to minors. So when people sometimes think that maybe I'm a little too strong on this, and I say, are you kidding me? We're chemically sterilizing minors, and you think what I'm saying is too rough? So other things that they do, well, then is surgery. Double mastectomies they're doing on minors. I think they do them as young as 14. I've read that, but I know 15 years old. I just read this week about a doctor who is doing hysterectomies on minor girls. They're now having these kids who get the cross-sex hormones, they're having them donate eggs and sperm in case they want to ever have biological children of their own. So this is what's going on in the community. I have to say this, in case anyone has ever heard that the American Academy of Pediatrics affirms the trans-affirmative medical protocol, they will tell you this, you will hear it, I've heard it at school board meetings, and I thought, That doesn't make sense to me. 66,000 members of the AAP are affirming this anti-science mutilation of minors. And so I started doing research, and I have, there's another organization, you should know it. It's called the American College of Pediatricians. They've split off from that. Michelle Cretella is the head. I know Michelle Cretella, and she has a friend who is a former head of the AAP. Talked to them about the process for the establishing this protocol. About a dozen people on a committee, two of whom are homosexual. I think there's a third one, but I couldn't confirm that. And another woman who's an LGBT activist, her adult son who's adopted children is homosexual. They came up with the protocol. Then another committee of about a dozen voted on it, and then it went out into the world. It did not go to the 66,000 members. There is no minority report, and most pediatricians didn't find out about this until it was released to the public. So if anyone ever says to you the AAP affirms this, you can say, not so fast. That's not exactly accurate.
The Illinois Family Institute's Lori Higgins. Part two of her recent address at Gospel Fellowship Church in Wheaton after these messages. This is Illinois Family Spotlight.
Well, if we're going to be politically correct, for the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with a point. Chuck Colson said a worldview can be tested by taking it to its logical conclusion. And a Massachusetts legislator did just that during a debate to allow a third gender, gender X, on state driver's licenses. The bill would have passed the Democratic legislature, but Republican Jim Lyons called out the hypocrisy. After all, if there's a myriad of genders, as the LGBT movement insists, then at the very least, the state should recognize the 73 gender options that Facebook does. So Lyons offered 73 additional amendments to approve each of the 73 genders. Each amendment requires 10 minutes of debate. According to LifeSite News, the Democrats, not wanting to offend gender ideology, gave it the old college try. But about halfway through, they realized they were out of time and withdrew the bill. Representative Lyons exposed the current state of gender ideology for what it is, ridiculous and unmanageable. That's true in real life and in the statehouse. For more on faith and culture, come to breakpoint.org. I'm John Stone Street.
This is Lonnie Chen of the Hoover Institution for townhall.com. Some Democrats are hysterical over the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to be the next Associate Justice of the United States Supreme Court. But they couldn't have picked a more reasonable and thoughtful jurist to get worked up about. Even a liberal law professor at Yale recently opined in the New York Times that Judge Kavanaugh is a superb nominee, and his legal chops are rivaled only by some of our country's most notable jurists. Indeed, those who support the rule of law have much to look forward to in a Justice Kavanaugh. He shows a reverence for the Constitution and a healthy skepticism of unbridled powers for the federal bureaucracy. Which brings us back to politics. Democrats have pledged to oppose him simply because he was nominated by a Republican. Let's hope they reconsider and give this good man the support he deserves. I'm Lon Hee Chen.
This is Illinois Family Spotlight. The Illinois Family Institute's Lori Higgins spoke recently at Gospel Fellowship Church in Wheaton. This segment of that address, she discusses desistance, detransitioning, the pronoun police, and how far too many churches are using the argument of grace to rationalize silence on sexual anarchy.
I want to mention two phenomena, desistance and detransitioning. Desistance is the experience young children who experience gender dysphoria, which, by the way, gender dysphoria is this experience of this mismatch between your body and your subjective internal sense. But it's still in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the Psychological Community, as a disorder. So now what the trans community is saying, yes, but many of us don't feel any distress over this mismatch, and therefore we don't have gender dysphoria. I just want to make clear what the left is now saying. So the best research today suggests that children who experience gender dysphoria, and this can emerge at very young ages, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, the best research says 80 to 95% of those kids will come to accept their sex. Many of them might identify as homosexual later, but they will accept themselves as the sex they are, unless they socially transition and they chemically transition. So if they're changing their names, if they're being allowed to wear opposite sex clothing, if their teachers are using opposite sex pronouns, if they are given puberty blockers, they're much less likely to detransition. If you hold off on all that, the statistical likelihood is that they will desist from this idea that they're the opposite sex or they want to be the opposite sex. The other is detransitioning. You can go online and find this. This is people who have been in the trans community and then they detransition. They come out, they stop taking their hormones. And some of these people are Christians and some are very liberal and they say they're, you know, identify as a, you know, a butch lesbian still afterwards, but realizes that they accept their sex. And there's one girl, her name is Carrie Stella, I think, who has a video on there, and she talks about how she had a double mastectomy at age 20. She detransitioned at 22. She's about 24 now, and says that she's left with a cracked voice and a scarred chest. That's what we're doing to kids today. So, nobody knows the cause for gender dysphoria, but some of these detransitioners will tell you that they identified the cause for their experience of dysphoria or distress about their physical embodiment as male or female. And some of those include abuse or molestation as children. That's very common. Some trauma. One person talks about his mother's suicide. Some girls, when they get to puberty and they start developing and they get unwanted and inappropriate attention from males, they start to feel very uncomfortable with their physical embodiment, and they think, if I were male, I wouldn't be getting this, and or if I were male, I would have more power. I would have more physical strength, and these things, if they were molested, couldn't happen to them. Autism. It's gender dysphoria is much more common among people who are on the autism spectrum, and they have other physical things, sensory inputs, issues and stuff. So broken and dysfunctional family relationships. I know there's a man named Walt Heyer, H-E-Y-E-R. Walt was married, had children. He then started identifying as a woman. He lost his family. He lost his marriage. He had surgery, so he's been castrated. He's now a believer. He's detransitioned. He's married again. But his grandmother used to dress him as a very young boy in girl's clothing all the time. And there's a more complex story. He's got a book out there. There's been an explosion of children and teens identifying as trans in recent years, especially among teenage girls. And this has to do with a phenomenon called social contagion. They go onto the internet. Maybe they're having some experiences. The culture is providing the lens, a distorted lens, through which kids are interpreting their experiences. And they do it with homosexuality, too. You know, when I was a little girl, it's very common. Any of us who have little children know that little girls, if they have a young, pretty, warm, maternal first grade teacher, little girls just love them. I subbed at a Christian school, Christian Heritage Academy, and I subbed for second and third graders, which I'm like a high school person. That's my favorite age of humans. So I was unaccustomed to second grade. So the second day I came back, I had all these like love letters, you know, Mrs. Higgins, we love you, Mrs. Higgins. Now lesbians will say, I've known since I was a little girl because I had a crush on my teacher. So we have provided a new lens through which to interpret normal, natural experiences. There's actually a phenomenon that they're calling now, the left hates it, the trans community hates it, rapid onset gender dysphoria. But I've talked to parents whose kids have this. They have never experienced gender dysphoria. They played with traditional toys. They never identified. But suddenly in adolescence, and they will say, and not only that, but she has three friends who are identifying as trans. And so this is a problem the culture is creating. A lot of times Christians are afraid, what is science going to say? What if science shows that there is a biological influence for the development of same-sex attraction or gender dysphoria? It must be moral. We know it's not. We know our bodies are broken. Everything's been affected by the fall. If they someday discover that gender dysphoria is influenced, the desire to be the opposite sex is influenced by intrauterine exposure to opposite sex hormones, it doesn't mean the behavior is intrinsically, automatically moral. If there's a biological influence for the development of aggressive impulses, we don't say, well, wow, go to town, beat people up. And so they'll say, oh, yes, but that hurts other people. The point is, our biology, science tells us nothing about morality. The cultural implications, I call them the pronoun police. It sounds like a trivial issue. It's not. It's a big deal. New York City passed an ordinance that says if you persist in using well, I call them grammatically correct pronouns for a transgender person. If you persist, you know, they'll give you a pass for the first few times that you forget, but if you persist, you could be fined up to $250,000. And we have now in our public schools, anyone in public schools here? Literally no one? Okay. Okay, good. I mean, not good. I want you out. I don't actually want anyone. I do think that we should be engaged in fixing the schools, because who's in public school now will be our culture makers, plus our taxes are funding this stuff. But there are families who just can't homeschool and they can't afford private schooling, which is why churches have to step in and do that. But schools are now telling teachers, you have to use opposite sex pronouns. Christian teachers are failing miserably on this. They're capitulating. That is affirming a lie. You know, we're talking about balancing grace or truth. So much of the reason the church uses grace to rationalize what is not actually grace. Like, they're using it to rationalize their silence or some sort of saccharine, milquetoasty, you know, oh, love everybody, but don't say anything ever about truth. So Christian teachers should not be using opposite sex pronouns. And John Piper has a great little, an audio video, where he's asked about this, not about public schools, but in the corporate world. And he said, you can't use opposite sex pronouns as a Christian. And so you have to tell your boss if they start saying you have to do that, and then you better start looking for a new job. Language matters, and the left gets it, and we don't. They will have a conniption if you won't use opposite sex pronouns. If it's so trivial, if it's so unimportant, why do they care so much? They get incrementalism. They understand how you make giant cultural changes incrementally. They get that language matters. We all read 1984, or we all should have read 1984. Newspeak. Language matters, so we can't capitulate on that. Recently, you might have heard about the Walgreens. I call it the Walgreens kerfuffle. Anybody hear about that in the news? Okay, so a butch lesbian, and I have to say that because it's what she looked like, went into a Walgreens in California, asked to use the restroom. They said she had to use the men's restroom. She said, but I'm a woman. They said, we go by appearance. And she said, okay. So she went in the men's bathroom, and she describes being humiliated and uncomfortable. She went into a stall. She said there were men using the urinal. She felt humiliated and uncomfortable. She left. She went to the ACLU. They sued Walgreens. Walgreens changed its policy, so now you can use the restroom in accordance with your gender identity, which I call now co-ed restrooms. So what Walgreens has done now is made discomfort and humiliation a universal policy for them, because that means that any of us could be in a restroom and the opposite sex person can come in. And so that experience that she had, and I don't think they realized where they were going with that, she said she's humiliated and uncomfortable using a restroom with persons of the opposite sex. So the question is, you know, what the left always says is trans people should not have to use restrooms, locker rooms, etc., with people whose gender identity they don't share. The question is, why should other people, normal people, cisgender people, be forced to use private spaces with those whose sex they don't share? That's the question. And ask someone on the left and see what their answer is. They don't have one. They might do what they do to me, is saying, you're stupid and I'm not talking to you. So these practices teach people things, and they teach people in public schools that if they want to be loving and inclusive and compassionate, they have to be willing to relinquish their privacy and share private spaces with persons of the opposite sex. Conversely, they tell them they're ignorant, hateful bigots if they think objective, immutable, biological sex matters in regard to feelings of modesty and the desire for privacy. So those policies and practices that are already in schools, and by the way, they're in schools and they're not even telling parents that their children are sharing these private spaces with opposite sex persons. And in fact, in some states, they now have passed laws, and what they'll say is, any kids who don't want to share restrooms with opposite sex peers, so if you don't want to share with a boy, she can go to the superintendent, to the principal, and say, I don't, and she will get special accommodations, and she will have to go into a special single occupancy, because the trans-identifying students have priority. And one of the reasons they have priority is because they'll sue, and conservatives rarely sue. Here's the deal. The ultimate end game for the trans community is not allowing this less than 1% of people, well, it's now increasing, but of people who experience gender dysphoria. Oh, I want to say this. In case anyone ever gets in a discussion and someone brings up intersex, do you know what intersex is? It used to be called hermaphroditism, now it's intersexuality. You don't have to know all about that other than to say it has nothing to do with transgenderism. Zero. Intersex conditions are biologically determined and diagnosable. They're often genetic disorders, things like Turner syndrome is one. I mean, there's a whole list of them. All you need to do is, because the left introduces intersexuality in order to confuse the issue. It has, just tell them, intersexuality has nothing to do with transgenderism. They also hate transgenderism, the word. They hate ism. I mean, the left does. So the ultimate goal is the eradication of public recognition of sex differences everywhere for everyone. An 18-year-old kid who identifies as trans, I wrote about him. He just graduated from Deerfield High School and got a JFK award at graduation. He's a boy, and he identifies as a girl. And he called, and so I wrote about it. It was in the Tribune. I don't write about kids unless it's in the press. And he called me to say that my article was wrong, and I said, you know, I'll make corrections, you know, what are they? And he said, well, first, you used the wrong pronouns. And I said, okay, pronouns correspond to objective biological sex. And he said, well, I'm a girl. And I said, but objectively, you're a boy. And he said, no, objectively, I'm a girl. And I said, do you know what objective means? Because evidently, he doesn't. So what he told me, without even asking, he told me exactly what I'm saying. He doesn't, right now, he wants to use the girls' restroom and locker room. But that's not what he wants. His dream is all co-ed spaces everywhere. That is, restrooms, locker rooms, showers, saunas, steam rooms, nursing home rooms, semi-private hospital rooms. I don't have time to tell you about a California law that was just passed, but it means co-ed spaces everywhere, which means no privacy anywhere. Also, you should know that the trans community doesn't think they need to be gender dysphoric. They don't need to experience gender dysphoria. They don't need to be diagnosed. They don't need to have surgery. They don't need to cross-dress. And Barack Obama, when he issued an edict to the through the Department of Education and other departments, said that all they need is to say that they identify as the opposite sex to have access to these spaces. So sometimes you'll hear people say, well, what are you going to have, the genital police outside restrooms? And I say back to them without wagging my head, I say, what do you think we should have? Should we have gender dysphoria police? Because otherwise, how are you going to know if that man who's seeking access to the women's facility is actually identifies as trans, or is he pretending to be trans in order to access his prey? There is no way to determine that. Also, public decency laws. Now in Illinois, you probably know, you can, well, you have been for a while, been able to get a new driver's license, falsified driver's license that says that you're the sex you are not. You can get a new birth certificate, made infinitely easier by Bruce Rauner, to get a birth certificate, falsified birth certificate. And so now you have a woman, she identifies as a man, she chooses not to have a double mastectomy, she has a driver's license that identifies her as a man, she has a birth certificate that identifies her as a man, meaning she has to be treated as a man by law, and she decides to go to the community pool in her men's swim trunks. What do we do? What do you do with, if you can be in an opposite, if you can be in the opposite sex facilities, and you know in a women's locker room, there's occasionally women walking around unclothed, so you have a man who's chosen to have breast implants, but not bottom surgery, because bottom surgery is more problematic. Can he walk naked in our restrooms? You know, every health club I know has a child care on premises, and also you can join at 13 or 14. So this is where we're headed, folks. And so this is why I say we have to speak up, because this matters. You got to talk to your kids by middle school. It's so prevalent in the culture. You got to talk to them. If you're going to talk to them, you got to know what to say, so you need to educate yourself. The halcyon days for Christians in America are over. Like, this is a whole new time period. We are in exile. I highly recommend this article that I read recently. It's an interview with Rob Dreher, is interviewing a vicar who's talking about, they're ahead of us, or behind us, but they're moving ahead with this trans thing, talking about what it's going to be like to be a Christian in this culture, which he identifies three reasons for the persecution that's coming. It's not just the trans thing, but that's a major one. The other has to do with Islam, and I forget the other one. So we have to start to think about, what are we willing to endure, what kind of persecution, in order to be Christ followers? Because it's not going to be just having someone mad at you. And so far in my experience, The persecution Christians are unwilling to endure is having someone mad at them. It's going to be way worse than that. We're going to have to think, how are we going to come alongside people who lose their jobs? Okay.
The Illinois Family Institute's Lori Higgins at Gospel Fellowship Church in Wheaton. A few reminders. The Illinois Family Institute's voter guide is a good way to find out where the candidates for office stand on privacy, life, taxes, and other key issues. For copies, call 708-781-9328. The IFI Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet is October 5th. Keynote speaker George Barna is one of the leading voices in Christianity today. Seating is limited, so order tickets online at illinoisfamily.org or call 708-781-9328. And please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax deductible. Tell a friend about Illinois Family Spotlight, and until next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to Illinois Family Spotlight. For more information, please visit us at ifiaction.org and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. If you would like to email us questions or comments, please do so at feedback@ifiaction.org. Until next time, stay engaged and keep your eyes on the prize.